Stormseer. Prologue. And so they had his brother, too. Meron Talas strained against his shackles. There was no point to his struggle. The orc bindings were as solid as they were crude. All he did was sink the metal into his flesh and come close to dislocating his shoulders. But the psychic agony of knowing that in another system, Elisat had been taken by the orc warlord's flagship demanded expression. He could howl his desperation, or he could pull against the bonds. So he struggled. He struggled in the painful twisting of his body to push away the despair that closed around his mind. He failed. The despair was as strong as the orc metal, as oppressive as the walls of the underground cave. With Elisat prisoner, the orcs, whether they knew it or not, had taken a great step towards a terrible victory. The Eldar's great fear was coming to pass. The humans had withdrawn from what they called the Octarius system, deciding to do nothing more than observe the conflict between the orcs and the Tyranids from a distance, hoping for mutual annihilation. They didn't understand. They didn't realize that the only possible outcome of that war was a strengthening of both species as they honed their rage and adaptability on each other. For the moment, the tide of the war was with the Tyranids. The orcs were spilling out of Octarius, set upon conquering new systems. And so they had come to this one. There were strategic rationales for them to do so. But there was another reason, too. He prayed that the orcs were unaware of it. Only he and Elisat knew the full secret of what gift the orcs could find here. It was the secret he had come to remove. He had seen the danger. The Saim Han had acted. The cruiser Serpent's Strike was faster and more maneuverable than anything the orcs possessed. It came to the Lepidus system to scour it of the beasts. Instead, it fell to their numbers. The Overfiend's ships came at it relentlessly. Many died, but there were always more and more and more. The orcs boarded at multiple points. They came straight for him. He and his kin fought hard. In the image of their ship, they killed many of the invaders. Like the cruiser, they could not kill enough. Meron Talas could foresee the attacks, but they were too many and they were too concerted for advanced knowledge to do any good. Barricaded on the bridge, cornered, deprived of the space to deploy with speed, the Saim Han of the Serpent's Strike made their last stand. The orcs took the doors down with high explosives. Massive brutes in thick armor barreled through the burning entrance. The Eldar cut the first two down, but again there were more. And behind them, something worse. It registered upon the skein of time as a dark, nomadic tangle. Meron Talas couldn't get a proper reading on it. He couldn't formulate a counter. Then the bridge filled with fire and shock, and it was all too late. The orcs had taken him, and now they had Elisat too. The orcs didn't fully understand the prizes they held. That was the only consolation. It was too small a glimmer to count as hope. It was only a matter of time before the orcs discovered what they held. They had taken the moon. They were taking the planet. They would find the secret. It would already be affecting them. And then these orcs would shatter the galaxy. The lighting in the chamber flashed brighter. The shadowed figure that had doomed him on the serpent's strike snarled something. The orc working the devices cackled with brutish delight. Merentalis caught a glimpse of energy arcing on the back of a hulking shape, and then felt the electric surge as a violent prickling of his flesh. The electrodes in the band around his skull came to life, stabbing their energy into his brain. He writhed again, involuntarily this time. The pain was a spike, driven from the back of his skull to his forehead, as power was forced to flow out. It was the power that defined him. His very identity was being torn from him by savage technology, reducing him to an energy source. Blinded by the pain, shocked into near unconsciousness, his awareness floated out onto the skein. He tried to think. He brushed along the tangled weave of moments to come. For all their interconnections and contingency, there was also a dreadful unity here. All those moments moving together to a single end, a cataract plunging to doom. And he could do nothing. Except he could see a possibility. It was a thin thread, easily broken by the vicissitudes of war and the ignorance of those upon whom it depended. But it was there, a potential course of events that might deny the orcs the victory that they themselves could not consciously anticipate. Merentalis could not influence events. He could not change this potential into the actual. But if the players upon whom it depended played their parts as they should, then a moment would come when he would have a choice. It would be a poor choice, one evil or another, but it would be his to make. It would be an action, and one of the evils was lesser. The thought of bringing it about would have made him weep if the machine that grasped him had allowed him that luxury. The greater evils approached him. The mirage of hope faded. The two orcs loomed over him, each the bringer of a different sort of pain. They grinned at him and got to work. The White Scar's strike cruiser, Legnica, was in sight when the visions came for Ghazan again. The figure of darkness and lightning, a brute mass of savagery and lethal cunning. The swirl of power, of reality, bending, twisting, collapsing into a fury of energy. The figure hurling the Nova rage through shattering worlds. Ghazan standing against the foe. The battlefield, a confusion of up and down, a vortex of metal, of gears and pistons, of destruction given mechanical form, and fate become a grinding clockwork. Ghazan launching his own attack, a war of storm against storm, thunder speaking with the voice of destiny, battles and worlds teetering in the balance. The figure of darkness and lightning must be stopped. The storm seer blinked. The visions receded for the moment, waves pulling back before another crash. His surroundings clicked back into place. He was once again in the troop compartment of the Thunderhawk, looking out the viewing block as the Legnica drew nearer. He was the lone passenger. The visions had left Ghazan alone during the bulk of the voyage, though it was their power that had impelled his journey in the first place. He had been headed to join the defense of the next system when the revelation had burst upon him. The White Scar had a destiny here instead on the moon of Lepidus Prime. The Sixth Brotherhood's frigate, Tulskar Pride, had dropped out of the warp at the Lepidus Mandeville Point, sending him by gunship to the Fifth Brotherhood's strike cruiser, now closing in on the moon. The Lepidus system was a small target for the Greenskins. The uninformed might have thought it unworthy of the confrontation that was building within sight of its sun. Only Lepidus Prime and its moon were habitable. The rest of the planets were either gas giants or cold rocks shrouded by toxic gases. Human colonization was so recent that the only permanent establishment was a large city on Lepidus Prime. A small enough prize, yet the orcs had committed major resources to taking it. And the Imperium had responded with forces from three chapters of Space Marines, the White Scars, the Raven Guard, and the Salamanders. The orcs were spilling out of Octarius in numerous directions, but Lepidus was a near neighbour to Octarius, and in turn was the gateway to a series of densely populated Imperial systems. If it fell, the orcs would have an easy resupply point, free of the Tyranids, from which to mount further invasions. Lepidus was key to the spread of the Orc Empire, and key to ending that spread. Garzan knew that the hope hatched in the grand war rooms, where the Imperial Navy and the captains of the Adeptus Astartes plotted strategy, was that if the orcs wanted Lepidus badly enough, and if they were hurt badly enough, then the Overfiend itself would attack the Imperial forces. This would give the Imperium the chance to end the green-skin menace in the subsector once and for all. Garzan held definite views about this hope. Though he had not spoken to him yet, he suspected that so did Temur, the Khan of the Fifth Brotherhood, tasked with taking back the moon alongside the 64th Regiment of the Mordian Iron Guard. Garzan could believe in a strong blow being dealt against the Overfiend. He did believe in the necessity of preserving Lepidus, but the talk of ending the threat came from the mouths of admirals who had been removed so long from the front lines that they had become more politician than warrior. Did they imagine the orcs and the Tyranids would remain contained within the Octarius system indefinitely? Very likely they did. It was an illusion that allowed them to sleep at night, and so they chose to act as if it were a reality. To be a Stormseer, a Zadyan Arga, meant having a much more firm hold on the hard edges of reality. That was true, he knew, for all Space Marine librarians. He and the other brothers of his calling had an added responsibility, though. The Zadyan Arga were the guardians of the spirituality of the White Scars. Grasping the soul of the chapter brought visions, and to parse those visions, to understand the path along which they dictated he must ride, it was necessary to view the undreamed world all the more clearly. It meant piercing the false visions that tried to disguise that world. Hopes and wishes and lies were the raw material of those illusions. So were names. Octarius. The name was a lie. A veneer of Imperial nomenclature that had come into use at the very time that the Imperium had had to abandon the system entirely to its warring monsters. To call it Octarius was to attempt, by naming alone, to lay a claim where none was possible. But Garzan remembered. The subjects of the Imperium had declared the planet Orok home. Perhaps the names had come to echo their doom too closely, a reminder of the conquest by the orcs. So now the system was Octarius, and there was rarely a mention of the colony that had been lost centuries before. Such pretense was not helpful to Garzan. It clouded the context in which his visions appeared. So he did his best to identify the bad faith that surrounded this mission. He focused on what he and his brothers were here to do, and interpreted the visions in terms of the bearing they might have on the mission, and not the web of hopes and political expediency in which the mission existed. Such rigor also demanded he be honest with himself. He had to guard against his own desire for a universe that was better than it was. Applying that honesty meant admitting that he had come to Lepidus for reasons that extended beyond the success of the mission. There were personal ones. His own destiny awaited him somewhere on the surface of that moon. Unbidden, the question came, "Are you being honest?"
"Yes, yes, I am."
"Your coming here is destined. There is no free will. You have no choice."
Choice.
The word was a thorn, stabbing at his certainty. Duty was not a choice, and that was no cause for discomfort. But the means by which duty was performed, there was choice there. Strategy was all about choice, and the Khan was facing difficult ones. Did Ghazan see himself as freed or bereft of the need to decide? Were his visions so definite in their meaning that his every important action up to the moment of his death was preordained? He set the questions aside. They remained in the back of his mind, gnawing. Through the viewing block, Ghazan could see the ship and the moon. The sense of imminence rose up, more powerful than ever. The beat of his heart sped up, even as his breathing slowed to a trance-induced somnolence. His mind's eye filled with the rage of the battlefield. He was swept up in a torrent of images. They were momentary fragments. Some were concrete, a ceramite gauntlet crushing a snarling green face to pulp, screaming humans squashed beneath monstrous treads. Others were abstract, the shape and sound of combat and loss, a synesthesia of colour, angle, and noise. From the centre of the images came the prophecy. A figure appeared. Its shape was ill-defined, but bestial. It reached out for him, and in its hands were the naked energies of creation and destruction. His soul rushed to meet the enemy. They clashed in an exaltation of war. The visions ended. Ghazan blinked, steadying himself in the here and now once more. He was right to have come. Something was waiting for him on the moon. It was eager for his arrival. He would make it regret that wish.